I've had in years, I reckon. So thank you much, Lee, for it. I don't know where to start there. You've already taken my first two slides, but that's cool. As Brian said, I'm Aaron, and I really, really think that anyone who works with young people needs to have a solid grasp of the basics around mental health. And I'll talk a bit more about that as I go. But let me kind of start by telling you a little bit about me. I have been working as a youth worker for the last 15 years in one form or another. I started in local church work. In fact, very local church work. I used to work for Eltham Baptist Church many, many, many moons ago now as their schools worker. And I'd go into schools and I'd run rah-rah programs and it was awesome. And then the school asked us, what more could we do? And my pastor at the time threw me under the bus and said, Aaron will do whatever you need. And so I ended up spending well more than what I was paid to in that school, supporting students who really needed just a bit of a listening ear. And most of those students had mental health issues that no one had really started to unpack. No one had really started to find out where they were at. I've got a master's in social work. That sounds really impressive, but it's really not. It just means I've spent a lot of time studying. I've got a degree in youth work, so my focus has always been on how do we work with young people to get the best out of them. And if you look at just the media on any given day, you'd think young people were the worst things ever created on God's green earth. You know, larrikins, hooligans, rioters, drug dealers, you name it. That's what the media is pushing. And that's what, if you ask average Joe on the street, what he thinks about young people, he'll tell you how crap they are. And that's never a good starting point if you're a young person. I've also done a few other things. So I worked in drug and alcohol work for a number of years, ended up managing a rehab for the Selvos. And during that time, we recognised that drug and alcohol use and mental health issues are so intrinsically linked that you can't just separate them out as had been done. So I was part of a group that initiated what they called the Dual Diagnosis Key Initiatives, working with a number of service users to make our rehab not just a drug and alcohol rehab, but a mental health rehab as well. I currently run a mob called Ultimate Youth Worker. Our sole focus is youth workers. We want to keep you guys in the sector. As you know, there's a high turnover rate of youth workers, and we think that the best way to support our young people is to have a really well-trained, well-supported group of youth workers that stick around for more than 2 years, which is currently the average. And to keep that going, I'm also the Youth Studies Coordinator at Eastern College, which means I coordinate at Cert 4 Diploma, Degree and Graduate Diploma of Youth Work. And in my spare time, I'm married with 5 kids. So as you can imagine, I don't sleep a lot. I enjoy bouncing my knee because I've got 10-month-old toddlers, 2 of them, twins. It's fantastic. But busy, busy life. And that's where people like Brian keep reminding me self-care is my thing, but I've got to practice it just as much myself. That's the kind of overview. I've worked in a number of fields, but mental health has always kind of been one of those ones in the periphery. And I'm one of those academics that hates academics that tell you stories from 10 or 20 years ago about what they used to do but have no practical experience now. And so just for the fun of it, I keep my hand in working with a group called Mind Australia, which is the leading provider of what we call the recovery aspect of mental health, and I work with their youth probably a day or two a month just to keep my hand in, so I can do this with a bit of legitimacy, yeah? Because there's nothing worse than that guy who used to do it but doesn't do it anymore. Ultimate Youth Worker in a nutshell, we provide training, supervision, so that one-on-one support or group support, and things like consultancy and all those other things. Basically, if someone's going to pay me to do something, I'll pretty much do it, which is why Brian's got me along tonight. We really, though, have that as our mission, you guys, the on-the-ground workers, those who spend their time with young people, those who spend their time trying to feed into their lives to make them the best that they can be. Because without you, who's going to pick up that slack? Not too many people put their hands up. So I just want you guys to turn to the people around you, and just for a minute, I want you to come up with a definition. And the definition I'm after is, what is a mental illness? Yeah? So just turn to the people around you, come up with the best definition you can of what is a mental illness. Go for it. How do we go?
Yep. First, because it's their age,
yep.
They do things different from what others would do.
Yep.
But that doesn't necessarily mean they are ill, it means they are different.
Okay, so we're talking about something different to the average here, yeah?
Different to the normal, but not a very
normal. Can you repeat
what you're saying? Yeah, 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 yeah. So, the different to normal, yes?
For a set age.
For a set age.
Every age is wrapped differently than circumstances they find themselves in. And given normal is a spread.
Yes.
Something that's quite, they seem to be reacting much differently from what that.
To the norm.
Or what the standard deviation of.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad you're using maths terms, and I'll tell you why. I hate the word normal. When we're talking about people, the word normal should not be in our vocabulary. The word normal is a math term. It's about standard deviations. It's about bell curves and charts and all that type of thing. And so we try to put people in this box. And as long as you're in that box and you're not quite outside of the box, we call you normal. So we use our math term to try and keep people in there. And it's a word I pick on my students all the time for. So try to get it out of your vocabulary if it's in there. Because what is normal? If I ask you to explain what the normal person is, it would knock out most of you in the room. Yeah? Yeah? It'd knock me out. You know? On at least one or two areas, you'd be gone. Yeah? So, but it's an area that we talk about when we're talking about illness, is this norm. Is there a norm there? Because psychiatrists also like bell curves. What else? Yeah, yep. Yeah, good, good. All right, so it's an impairment that can stop you doing things that you would normally be doing, and it can be chemical or emotional. Good, yeah? All right. What else?
So if you rephrase that, it has an impact on normal behavior.
It has an impact on normal behavior. Once again, what is normal behavior? Keep that one in the back of your head. What else? So glad everyone's used normal to start off with. This is great. Anything else? No?
It affects someone's ability to function within society.
Yeah, ability to function within society. Cool. Yep. Good. I think you've covered off on most of the points I'm going to make. So this is the definition that we use for our mental health first aid course. It comes from a lot of work. Just as an aside, the youth mental health first aid course is one of those bits of research that turned into something practical. And it has some of the some of Australia's biggest names in mental health behind it. So if you do a search for mental health journals, there's two names that come up. Professor Pat McGorry, who was Australian of the Year and is a psychiatrist. He started Origin Youth Mental Health. And the other one is Professor Tony Jorm. These are the two guys that you will just find articles from galore. Well, it wasn't Pat who started this. It was Tony and his wife, who saw that there was a need for the general public to have an understanding of mental health issues. So this is the definition that's most widely agreed on by a number of psychologists and psychiatrists with a bit more standing than I have. And they say, a mental illness is a diagnosable illness which causes major changes in a person's thinking, emotional state and behaviour. And it disrupts the person's ability to study or work and carry on their usual personal relationships. So I think we covered off on pretty much all of that except that diagnosable bit. What do you think we mean by diagnosable?
That's based on
characteristics. Yep. Yep. That are not in the norm. Yeah. So, you know, you go to the doctor and you sit down, he's not just going to look at you and say, you have X, Y, or Z. He's got a set of characteristics that you have to be able to show to then be diagnosed. For those of you who are a little interested in this, that comes from what we call the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual number 5. They've been around since the 50s, and they finally got to number 5 a couple of years ago. And it's a lovely thing. It looks like a phone book. And if you were having one of those drinking games, you could just flick open a page anywhere and look at the diagnostic criteria, and you probably have it. You know, when people think that, you know, it's very clear, actually a lot of mental health stuff is not as clear cut as we would think it is. Why is it important for us to understand mental illness, mental health issues for young people? This is a question I get asked a lot, generally from a balding middle-aged man who's like, oh, this is just not worth me sending a person along to. Why should I do it? And I'm like, well, here's just a couple of reasons. Mental health problems are common in young people. Let me see. Can I just get this side of the room to stand up, please? Yeah. Just here. You guys represent how common mental illness is for young people in the room. About 1 in 4 young people. And we'll have a look at the data in a minute. Thanks, guys. So it's common. It's not one of those things that's an outlier that, you know, 1 in 50 people have. 1 in 4. There's a real high level of stigma. We've done a lot of work with adults to kind of counter the stigma, and you've probably seen the Beyond Blue ads and the Black Dog Institute ads that have started to break that down. And in the studies that have been done over the years, we've seen a decrease in the stigmatization of adult mental health. Those same studies done with young people show that it's still plateaued. Young people still see mental illness as a significant stigma. Many young people aren't well informed on most things, let alone mental health. You know, we don't teach this stuff in school, and we should, because it's so common. But because young people don't know, that's where the stigma comes in. It's also where they don't know how to get help, and so things get worse. Which is why we need to be able to recognise some of this stuff. A young person may not realise they need help or that effective help is available. So two parts there. They may not realise that this feeling of just the world being against me is actually probably something to do with my mental health. And then they don't know that there's treatment available that can help them to take that next step. A helper's actions may determine how quickly the young person with the problem gets help or recovers. So if you're that disruptive kid in the back of the classroom and the teacher just says shut up all the time or go to the principal's office, that's not helping you with your mental health issues. And if you don't recognise that those things in the background are causing the behaviours, then that young person may not get the help they need as early as they need. And mental health problems interfere with just general adolescent development. And we'll have a look at that in a minute. Does this ring true for you guys? You can call me out if you think I'm talking bull. I'm okay with that. These are the top areas we see when we're working with young people as to why mental health issues continue to come up and continue to be an issue. So, mental illness impacts on long-term health. It's not one of those things that you can just put a band-aid on and it's all fine in a couple of weeks. If a young person experiences mental illness, they're more likely to experience more episodes of mental illness later in life. That's even if they get treatment. And the use of drug and alcohol to self-medicate increases likelihood of later substance use problems and mental illness. And as we saw in the Black Dog video, taking a drink, using drugs, it's not uncommon to try and deal with the mental health issues that people deal with. And it doesn't matter whether that's young or old. In fact, one of the groups that is most at risk of this is the over 65 males. They've retired. Mental illness is right there. They don't have anything to distract them. So what do? We go and hit the booze and story tells itself. Getting help can reduce the likelihood of further episodes. And getting help early. What we find in the youth mental health side of things is we get kids that are 15, 16, 17 coming in with a first episode of mental health issues, but really it's their 15th or 16th mental health issue. It's just no one really picked up on it. The teacher just thought they were a disruptive child. The sports coach thought they just didn't have any oomph in them. Mum and dad just thought they were a pest, but all of those things, if they had looked back, mental health issues. And this is where you guys come in, all right? As Brian was saying, so important that we have people who have a bit of nous about them to be able to recognise that there's something more going on behind the scenes, that this young person isn't just a brat, that there's probably something else to it. Has anyone been on a camp or a trip or something and you've seen that kid that's either on the side just causing no harm, just doing their own thing, or, you know, you've got the kids that are just going absolutely bananas because it's, you know, just fun and I'm being the class clown. And did you ever have that moment where you're like, oh, maybe it's more than that? You know, maybe there's something here, but you didn't have time to do anything about it. Well, hopefully by the end of this hour, which I'm trying to give you 4 hours worth of content in an hour, so if I'm going too fast, just grab me and slow me down. But you'll have a bit more of an understanding that gut feeling that you had actually probably has some reason behind it. It has a bit of data. When we look at adolescent health, we look at kind of three areas. We call it biopsychosocial assessment. Biophysical stuff, what's going on there. Psycho, everything happening between your ears. And social, the groups of people that we hang out with. I just want you to turn to the people around you and just for the second, just think about physical health. What's going on for the average kind of 14, 15-year-old male or female, with their physical health? Go for it. Talking that normal, that bell curve stuff, yeah? What's the normal stuff? All right, let's think back to when we were young people. Did anyone have pimples as a kid? I had shocking pimples. I had this one on the end of my nose, made me look like Rudolph, you know, just big, red, angry thing. It was there for like 2 years, you know. That's normal, apparently, so I'm told. What else did you come up with, physical stuff? What's some of the normal things that we would expect to see for this fictitious 15 or 16-year-old? Yeah. So what's that going to look like for us? Yep. Blokes, we tend to get broader shoulders. Girls develop these things on the front of their chest. It's amazing. We get hair in places we never knew hair could grow. Yeah, what else? Your voice drops, if you're a boy, hopefully. once again, mine didn't for a while, and I talked really high until year 10. What else? Yep. Skinny. Yep.
So I know we threw out our scales, most of it, our daughter's scales, all
that. Yeah. Right, 3 or 4 years. Yeah. Mum and dad buy you these clothes and they fit this week, but next week they don't because you got tall or fat and then skinny and then, yeah.
So it's kind of physical.
Yep. And just general growth because we need to hit that adult period where you're probably not going to get any taller or broader or, yeah. What else?
Yeah,
all of a sudden there's this just attraction to what's going on around you. Yeah. And that has many other physical things that go on. Yeah. What else? No, we're just going with physical at the moment.
It's up to you to just provoke stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're used to wearing a size 9 and in 2 months you're a size 12, well, you've got a lot of learning to do in that time. All of a sudden you're walking into walls because that wasn't there just last week. Yeah. 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 Those hormones tend to just help you excrete awesomeness, which if you've ever walked into the cabin of a year 9 boys camp, you just close the door again and burn it because it's the only way to get rid of that smell. We sweat more. We tend to have moments where we just get kind of disorientated because the world's just not as it was for me just a while ago. Yeah. What about emotional?
I think you become more aware of other people's reactions to things that you do.
Yep. I'd say you get hyper aware. And that's not necessarily a good thing because when your best friend says, "Oh, I can't sit with you today, I've got to do something else," well, that's the end of the world because they don't love me anymore. And or your girlfriend says, "Nah, that's the end of it. You want to go and kill yourself." What else?
So everything's at an extreme.
Yeah.
You're either extremely happy or extremely unhappy.
Yeah.
Your best friend or your worst enemy.
Yeah.
It's one or the other.
It's very black and white of dualistic thought, you know. Life is either the best thing on the face of the planet or it's the worst thing ever to, you know, come at you. What else?
I think you're unaware of what's going on sometimes. You're sort of like, in the smells bit, we often say to the youth, teenagers code for a shower a day with soap.
Yep.
And we've got to say with soap.
Yep.
And deodorant. And you've got to spell it out.
Yep.
They all of a sudden they shower, they always shower, just have a shower, get 2 minutes, don't use any soap, it's all fine.
Yep.
And sort of all of a sudden, not fine.
Yeah. There's a really great TED Talk. You guys watch TED Talks? Some of you, yeah, good. The woman's name, and I'm going to stuff this up, is Sarah Jane, I think it's Blakemore. She does a really great TED Talk on adolescent brain development. And at kind of that 15, 16, 17 age bracket, your brain is just having one of those big explosion times. But the last part of it to actually do anything is this lovely bit at the front we call the prefrontal cortex. And that bit, funnily enough, is the thing that stops you doing stupid stuff, like running down the middle of the road, or stealing stuff, or hitting people, or, you know, just the you know, really socially acceptable stuff. So the prefrontal cortex regulates your ability to actually rationalize, to make good decisions. And whilst their brain is doing this woo big growth moment, that bit just not so much. For guys, we're even worse. It takes even longer for us. That's why we drive cars stupidly in our 20s. But for girls, it kind of ends, that kind of growth spurt, around about 21, 22. For guys, we push out to 24. Because, you know, it takes a long time to perfect perfection, right? What about we've done bio, we've done psychologically. What about socially? What are some of the big social issues for young people?
Social pressure.
Social pressure, yeah. Peers telling us to do things that we probably don't want to do, but we do it because we want to fit in. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's some of that emotional stuff, because we, you know, our brains are doing this blah thing, and we're just trying to make sense of the world, and so we try to paint a picture of what fits for our social group. What else?
Independence,
yeah, from mum and dad particularly, yeah. Yeah, so it's in this time that we really see what we call secondary socialization. Mum and dad, they don't know anything. They were never young. They never did stupid stuff. And so we look to who is the best group of people that we can possibly find to help us through this time. And it's our friends who are just as dumb as we are. So we all hang together and we do things like, so what should we do tonight? I know, we'll get absolutely blasted. We'll just drink as much as we possibly can because that is fun. Well, you know, maybe not. There we go. We'll work on it. what else? What else? Social issues for our young people.
Relationships.
Yeah. Physically, we started looking at everybody else and we said, ooh, he's a bit of all right. She's a bit of all right. Let's try and work this stuff out. It may need battery, right? we go, oh yeah, she's a bit of all right. He's a bit of all right. We're going to try and work it out. I was, at a place in Ivanhoe just recently, and there were a couple of boys in that kind of year 9, 10 age bracket, and there were a couple of girls over in the distance, and I could see them checking them out. And so I did the good youth work thing and sided up to them and went, so which one do you like? And they all went, and then one brave one said, that one in the middle, she's a bit of all right. And I said, well, we'll go and tell her. And he went, no, I can't do that. No. So, you know, we're trying to develop relationships and we don't really know how to do that. But we're also, if we're in a relationship, we're still trying to work out what that means because I don't know anything about myself, let alone anyone else. What else?
More tribalism.
Yep.
That takes place, so more defined friendship groups.
Yep.
Which might compete against each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we get gangs. Because my buddies, we know stuff that your group doesn't. And so we're already against each other. And that's an issue. Anything else come to mind for... this one? The social aspect? Yeah.
You're now probably a young adult.
Yeah. Hey, hey. And that's really interesting because in different parts of the world, that's different. You know, in some countries, it's younger. In some countries, it's older. We have this sense that in Australia, here we go. 18 is this kind of number that we just kind of grabbed from somewhere. And no one really knows where that 18 number came from. But we kind of grabbed it and went, that'll do. You're an adult when you turn 18. But even that doesn't really fit very well because you can be tried as an adult to go to jail from the age of 12. So, you know what? If you murder someone, maybe you end up in an adult jail. Wouldn't that be awesome? Or we then say there's some things you can't do until you're 21. Like, did you know, parents, that you are actually legally responsible for your children in Victoria until they turn 21, even though they're considered an adult? You're legally responsible for them. Not really sure how that works, but that's the legal system. Let's have a look. So we talked about the secondary sex characteristics. We talked about sweating and growing breasts and getting hair in places that you didn't know you got hair in. Mental illness can affect that. For instance, if you've got an eating disorder, and you're not getting the nutrients in that you need, how's your body meant to develop normally? Some of the medications that you might need to be on can slow down the secondary sex characteristics. I mentioned the ongoing brain development, that lovely bit at the front. Well, the norm is that 21, 22 for women, 24 for males. But we see in the CAT scans and the like that that prefrontal cortex, if it doesn't really do its thing in that adolescence period, it's probably not going to do it later. So if you've been a heavy drug user, for instance, through your teens, your prefrontal cortex is not as large as the norm, the average person who hasn't been using drugs through their teens. We talked about establishing identity, autonomy, and intimacy. Think about mental illness now. Throw it into the mix. You're a young person suffering from severe depression. Are you going to have a social network? Probably not. You're probably going to stay at home. You'll probably have more days off of school than the average. You will probably not want to go out. The likelihood of you getting a girlfriend or boyfriend is lowered. All of a sudden, you're having some issues of identity and autonomy and intimacy. And that prefrontal cortex does all that advanced thinking and reasoning. Like, if I stand on the train tracks, that 100 tons of metal coming towards me will probably kill me. But it's fun to play on train tracks, right? So we'll do that and see what happens. I used to work in drug and alcohol and manage a rehab, and it was at the end of the really big chroming time of the late 90s, early 2000s. And the guys used to tell me they loved to chrome with yellow and red paint. I said, why yellow and red? I love green. Why yellow and red? And they said, well, yellow paint gives us superpowers and red paint makes us invincible. So when I'm train surfing and that bridge is coming towards me, I'll just go through it because I'm invincible and superhero. Maybe not so much with the advanced thinking and reasoning there. And a social development. We're becoming comfortable with our sexuality. We can actually go up and try to talk to the opposite sex. We may even, if we're one of the lucky ones, get a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Achievement's a big one here though, and this is one that parents and society really push, and we were touching on it at the end. There's a sense that if you don't get straight A's, cruise into university, get a great job by the time you're 21, you've probably sucked. You know, that's the sense that we have as a culture at the moment. And we keep pushing that on our young people. And we particularly wonder why in year 11 and 12, when it's really stressful, our young people have significant breakdowns. I was chatting with a teacher last year, and one of her students had spent some time in a psychiatric ward. And I was just chatting because I knew this young guy. And I said, so how are you thinking of hooking him back into class? And she's like, oh, he's got a lot of work he's got to catch up on. I said, hang on a minute. I'm not even talking about the work. How are you going to get him back into just the social aspect of being in class? And she said, that's not my job. I was like, far out. That kid went back to school for 3 weeks and then he left. He just couldn't take it because he wasn't kind of invited back into that space. And it really was, you've missed all this work. Pull your finger out and catch up. That's the world of achievement. That was a Christian school too. I think they should be doing much better, but, you know, that's just me. The impact of these issues is huge, and I just want to really touch on these quickly. The other health problems that can come with mental illness are phenomenal. I got to spend a bit of time with, we have one of the best eating disorders clinics in the world in at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. That's a badge of honour and a badge of shame. It's a badge of honour because it's awesome, they do a lot of really good work, but it's a shame that we need that in Australia. And those guys are working with some very, very unwell young people, mainly female, but we're seeing an increase of males. The associated physical health issues that come with mental illness are wide and varied. For a young person who has an eating disorder like bulimia nervosa, where they eat something and then purge it and then think the world is all okay, whether they purge it through vomiting or going to the toilet a lot. Heart issues, massive, massive issues with their heart. Liver. Just general developmental stuff, let alone your anxieties and your depressions. They all have co-occurring health, physical health issues. Brain development, obviously, poor eating. Has anyone gone hungry, like really hungry, done the 40-hour famine and just not ate anything or the like? Bless you. How do you do that? But yeah, if you've ever been hungry, like you'd eat the wall because it looked tasty, you know that you just don't think straight. You go into this haze moment. Same type of thing here. Drug and alcohol use. If you're using drugs and alcohol to self-medicate, you're probably not fully compos mentis. Things like severe weight loss prevent normal pubertal process, particularly for girls. That's breast growth, having periods. For guys, not as much testosterone, so lack of erections, lack of chest hair, those type of things. And if you're, say, severely depressed and you spend your entire time in your bedroom, you're probably not going to be getting out and doing exercise. And as you saw in the Black Dog video, even just getting out for just a bit of a wander in the fresh air and a bit of sunlight is seen as really good for you. Particularly in the morning, you get a bit of vitamin D, it keeps rickets away. Gold, yeah? Psychological development. It's really going to rush through this because we're running on time. Cognitive development can be interrupted by thinking difficulties, lack of concentration and motivation. Has anyone been anxious before? Like, I'm not talking about anxiety, but just a bit anxious. Like, you're, yeah. Everyone's been a bit anxious at one stage or another. Would you say in that time you were thinking logically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. So there's a physical reaction to your mental focus. Yeah. I hate heights. Heights are not my thing at all. I actually started in the army many, many moons ago, and one of the things they got me to do is jump out of a perfectly good aeroplane. So standing in the aeroplane, and thankfully I was the first to get pushed out the door, I just had that moment of, oh no, I've totally forgotten everything I know about pulling this cord that's going to save my life. I had no idea what I was going to do. I'd totally forgotten that I was actually hooked up. So it didn't matter whether I pulled the cord or not. It was going to pull anyway. But I just had no rational thought moment. All was fine. I'm still here. I landed perfectly. And I did another 40-odd times. We see, particularly with our young people, though, these mental health issues lead to withdrawing from social situations. And the main social situation, school. And so we have a massive rate of school withdrawal, and it's a lot bigger than the government is saying it is right now. If you speak to most low socioeconomic schools, they would say that 20 to 25% of their students are not attending at a level that would be considered passable. Big issues. So social withdrawal, mood disturbances, ongoing false negative thoughts, or what some psychologists call automatic negative thoughts, ants, and poor self-esteem and self-efficacy, which most teenagers have anyway. And then throw a mental health issue into there, you're going to have it worse. Social development, withdrawal from those social situations, dependence on your family as your main socialization, so you're not getting that secondary socialization, and reduced autonomy, which then leads to long-term issues of support, which we have seen with the adult populations that went into mental health facilities like Mont Park and Larundel just down the road. They have no autonomy. If they're not told what to do, they don't know what to do. So this is some data from 2007. We're hoping that this year they'll do a repeat of it, but 100,000 odd people around Australia were given a phone call and told, how are you feeling today? Can we ask you some questions? And then they were basically given the standardized test for anxiety and depression. And this is the data, and this is where we get some of our numbers from. As you can see, it's broken down into 16 to 24 and 16 to 85. The data doesn't really look at youth. It's just an overall encompassing thing, so we had to separate that data out. But around about 11% of all males will have some form of anxiety that could be considered disorder level by the time they're into their 16 to 85 bracket. 18 for women, and so on and so forth. And this is where we get the number that you've probably heard, 1 in 5 Australians could potentially have a mental health issue. And it was one of those bits of data that Beyond Blue really jumped on and used in all of their ads and rock out to them. And so we're having this idea that 1 in 5 people in Australia potentially could have a mental health issue. But then we look at just the 16 to 24 bracket. As we see for males, it's a bit lower in all of them except substance use, where young males are double the proportion for substance use disorders. Let's have a look at females. A little bit higher in anxiety, touch higher in depression, three times higher in substance use issues. And so we put it all together and we get this number, 26.4%. It's about 1 in 4. Young people, that under 25 age bracket, are highly susceptible to mental health issues. And particularly, we'll touch on drug and alcohol in a minute. What do you think the median onset of these disorders is? So we've got 100 people, number 50 here in the middle. Half of the people will have it before this age, and half of the people will get it after this age. So what do you think the median age for an anxiety disorder would be?
15?
Yep. Anyone else?
21.
21? Bit older? Yeah. What about depression?
35.
35. Old people. Yeah. 16, 15? Yep. Yeah. Eating disorders? 13? 12? Earlier? Yeah. What about substance use? Same, at 12, 13? Any other takers? 15, 17? Let's have a look. For anxiety, 15 years. Well done, whoever said that. Bang on. Think about what's happened to the average 15-year-old. They're at the end of kind of year 9, going into year 10, you're being told to make decisions about the rest of your life. Because teachers like to make it seem like their job is huge, and so you have to work out the rest of your life right now. What subjects do you need to do to get into the right uni to have the right job? Well, that's like a 10-year period of life, and I don't know about you, but my life's changed a lot in 10 years. I have 5 kids and I got married. Like, that's a lot, and I've had a half a dozen or more jobs in that time as well. So, like, we're telling kids to, like, map out the rest of their life at year 9, 10 level, and that's anxiety-provoking. Depression, median age, 25. It's a bit later. Think about what's happening at 25. You've got to the end of uni or TAFE or whatever you're doing. If you're lucky, you've got to the end of it. And you got that job that you thought was going to be awesome, and actually it was the worst job ever, and you've got a boss who's on your case, and, oh, I've got to wake up at 6 a.m., and that's not what I signed up for. I'm depressed. Median onset for eating disorders is 18, so we see about half before 18, half after 18. That's really that kind of moving out of home period, where you move out of home and your mum and dad aren't there to keep an eye on what you're actually eating, or saying, hey, have you had a drink today? Or, you know, hey, dinner's in the fridge. Substance use, 18. This one's a bit interesting. The data wouldn't say that there's much before 18, simply because young people aren't meant to drink before they turn 18. So there's a legal question in there. We'd actually argue it's much younger than that, but the data says 18. But if you think about it, I turn 18, what's the first thing I do? Well, I go and get my license. The second thing I do is go to the pub and celebrate that I turned 18. So not unusual. But it really means that, in a nutshell, half of people, before they turn 18, of our 26%, are going to have experienced their first episode of a mental health issue, which is right in your alley, guys. You know, these are guys that, you know, need some support. Biggest barriers that young people say are reasons they don't get help. They feel embarrassed or shy. Well, that's that stigma stuff we were talking about earlier. So if we can break down that stigma and be a safe person, then the young people will be able to hook in and get that support they need. And the other one was they're afraid of people and what they might think of them. That's stigma again. And so if you're that safe person and you say, hey, you can tell me anything, you know, it's not going to shock me or scare me or whatever. Other ones that are a bit lower, negative self-perceptions, denial. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't have mental health issues. and concerns about privacy. If I tell you, are you going to have to tell mum and dad? As a safer adult, I didn't change this, just did this with the chaplains, but for you guys as well, you can help break down the stigma and provide accurate information. That's the key here. You've got to provide some accurate information to help the young people make wise decisions. Legally, 12-year-old could walk into a GP by themselves and be seen by that GP. Mum and dad don't have to know, right? What you guys do as youth workers in the presbytery, that's something that you guys need to work out. But if you give the young person the information and they go and get some support, that can't hurt. I'm just going to bang through this to this slide. When we talk about health issues, there's this thing called the burden of disease. Basically, it's how hospitals get their funding. They look at the burden of disease and they put money towards stuff. Now, they put it towards thoracic medicine and cardiology and all this stuff. But if we look at where the burden of disease actually is, and our light bulb's killing us, right? For males, aside from road traffic accidents and migraines, they're all mental health issues. So we've got anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, suicide and self-harm, heroin, polydrug use, a few other ones there. What do you always hear from the news when there's a road accident, though, involving a young person? Alcohol or drugs. So I'd argue that actually alcohol, road traffic accidents, you could probably lump that into a mental health issue as well. On the female side of things, we've only got a few here that are mental health issues. The top one, anxiety and depression, schizophrenia, personality disorders and the like. Road traffic accidents, they got in the car with their boyfriend who was drunk and, you know, you got the story there. So the burden of disease, the cost to our economy of mental health is significant. And it's an area that if we're able to provide a bit of support there, then our community cost goes down. Almost done. And I want to leave you with some good resources. So if you go to this website, Mental Health First Aid Australia, mhfa.com.au, /CMS/guidelines, they've put out, these are all really good colours actually, but our thing here doesn't do it. But these are little one or two pages that are designed specifically for young people. You can talk through with them, download them, they're great. Another one's Headspace. Headspace do some really great youth fact sheets. If you're working with young people, they should be in your bag. Like, they should go with you everywhere. You can download some apps from Mental Health First Aid and the like as well. So really worth being on your phone. Aside from that, come to my website, the shameless self-promotion bit. But our focus, like I said, is on you guys. So we want best practice and all that type of thing. We've got over 200 articles on there at the moment. And I would say, just at a guess, 20% of them are around young people and mental health issues. That's how much we think that youth workers need to know about this area. So ultimateyouthworker.com.au. And we've got a few other things on there as well. We started a podcast last year to try and get out some of this stuff, some things on self-care and how do you keep yourself going when you're hearing god-awful stories all the time, some stuff around good practice and the like. So if you're into podcasts, check that one out. Wrong button. There we go. We have next Thursday, if you're interested and if it's something that you're in need of, just a one-dayer on self-care and self-care strategies for youth workers. $100 over at Eastern College, so there's some flyers on the back about that. And if you want to know more about mental health, wow, that is really bad. That should be green. If no, it's the bulb. Yeah, If you want to know more, do the course that Brian did. It's designed for any adult to be able to do, but it's really, really pitched for guys in human services and support work. 2 days, you learn a bunch of stuff, and what I showed you there is the first 2 hours. So come along, learn about how you can support young people, and we give you some little tips and cheats and things like that to be able to talk to young people about mental health issues. And that's me. Thanks.
We're going to have a supper break. For those who don't know Amy, this is Amy, who now works with me in the PYB office. We thank Amy for her hard work in getting some stuff ready. So we're going to have a 15 minute stop for some supper, grab a drink, grab something to eat. If you want to ask a question, can I encourage you to write it down? There's some bits of paper on the table up the back there. If you could write it down and hand that to Aaron, and then he'll be prepared and ready to answer your questions. So from about 9 o'clock, about 5 to 9, I'll do a quick book review. 9 o'clock to 25 past, we'll be asking Aaron some questions.
Terrific.
Hydrate people.
Please. Amy will instruct us on anything we need to be instructed on.